Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Together, Rachel and I are wishing you a happy Friday, October 6th. Right?
I mean,
are you wishing it on them too?
I am.
Or is it just me?
A happy
we love
Friday.
Fridays here, folks.
Yes.
We love Fridays, and you get to go out of town and everything.
I'm literally driving to Vegas as soon as we get off.
Really?
Off
well, it's a beautiful day to drive.
I'm gonna stop at CVS to get a new phone charging cord, and then I'm on the road.
On the road.
I'm still deciding which route I want to take. If I want to do Pear Blossom, or is that what it's called?
Yeah, Pear Blossom. Where you go through the 14.
I love going through the pear because it's. I like
the up and down thing, right?
And just like the scenery, all the Joshua trees and stuff.
Right. It's just a 2-lane road, and but then when you get stuck behind cars, it's
I know.
Like,
but
it's
hoping right
pass.
Now, and plus with everything that happened last weekend, that many people aren't going to Vegas this weekend.
I wish you're right.
So,
I hope you're right. But at any rate, what can you do? But when you leave at this hour, you're probably right. You should go that way and not through the 15. And,
yeah.
You know. Or the 10, rather.
But if anyone who's listening is in Las Vegas, I'm doing a comedy show tonight at the Hard Rock at the Bonkers Comedy Club tonight at 8 p.m. and Sunday also at 8 p.m. Bring your friends. Tell your mom.
Yeah, if you're in Vegas, why not? It's going to be awesome.
Bring your psychiatrist.
Get to see Rachel in action. You're pretty funny. That's cool.
Thank you.
So is this your first time at that club?
At this club, yeah, it's my first time. So hopefully it won't be my last.
Yeah. Have you performed a lot in Vegas too? Or?
I've been starting to in the past year. I've been able to go and perform at like the LA Comedy Club, which is at the Stratosphere, but I think I definitely performed way too early. I did that show a couple times. I got to perform at the esteemed Backstop Sports Bar in Boulder City, Nevada.
There's probably what, two people there in the audience?
There was three, and they were all smoking cigarettes.
Oh, wow.
And
you must have died.
It was great. And then I performed at the Space Las Vegas, which was last two weekends ago.
Uh-huh.
I've been getting around, and now the Hard Rock. So I'm trying to, I never do anything the way I'm supposed to in my life, but somehow I've managed to make it somewhat work, I guess, self-proclaimed. So instead of getting big in my hometown first, I'm deciding to go back to my hometown, go back there, get big.
Well, whatever works for you, but you know, you got to make it in LA, right? Although, what do you care if you get like a niche audience in Vegas that likes you a lot? That they follow
you know what? It's I'm grateful because all of my family's out there and they have a big, you know, community of following of people. They're pretty well known. So, I get butts in seats, you know?
Now let me get this straight. Friends of your parents who are very straight are gonna come to a show where you do funny things
on weed. You would
think
that they're straight. Like one of my mom's like best friends is this amazing lawyer. He's this gay guy who's a lawyer who literally gets away with saying whatever the fuck he wants. Like,
really?
She's like, it's just amazing. Like, he'll be able to walk into court with like a pink suit on and do.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have an eclectic group of friends. My dad will be there tonight and I'm not going to be censoring myself.
Good.
But, you know, I may
no, be yourself. He's got to accept your act, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. So, it'll be interesting to see.
Well, maybe you shouldn't know if your father is there. He should just come and
I know. That's
in.
Why I'm like, please, people don't. I just want to pretend I never heard that.
Just don't think about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, don't think about it. Hopefully, he'll laugh a little
bit.
Well,
he was like, remember, Rachel, everything you put on Facebook, you know, I'm running a campaign this year. And I was like, well.
Yeah. But look, Rachel, you know what? When you look at it from his perspective, he has to say that.
Yeah.
You know, to you.
Of course.
I mean, it's his concern.
Just
you know?
A reminder, he Rachel, can... cannabis consumption in hotel rooms is still illegal. Yep. Got it.
So let me ask you this. What about in a parked car? Can you smoke then?
No.
In you can't smoke anyway, right?
In
your home. Mm-hmm. And then you go in your home and the neighbors complain that it stinks.
Yeah.
So what the fuck, right? Where are you going to go?
I know.
That's why here we go everywhere, man. Yeah. You go in nature.
Well, that's why, I was going to try, well, you know, since my dad did tell me that, I was going to mention this story from last time, how I think I briefly told you that I didn't realize that there's no place to publicly consume. So I was like, I'm going to try and figure out a way to tell this story without, you know, getting my... I was like, I may have smoked a joint possibly outside a hotel room, perhaps called Aria, and maybe a security guard came up and perhaps asked me to put out the joint, and I possibly listened immediately, you know? And right. Like, how am I going to say this joke without
That's true, right?
getting myself in trouble?
You know what was interesting? When I was in Tahoe and I went to the dispensary, they let you smoke there. And he says, yeah, because you can't smoke anywhere. You can't smoke on the beach. You can't smoke in the hotels. At least we provide people some place to hang
Meanwhile,
out.
Meanwhile, they're like, here, please drink your alcohol and smoke your cigarettes.
Take your
around
opioids
kids. Yeah,
shit.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to do, man? You know, it's like unfortunate, but that's how, that's just how, I guess I saw on Facebook somebody put up a sign that says like consuming marijuana at the airport is illegal, or in public places it says, and it says even ingestion. I mean, what the fuck? You going to tell me if to eat a cookie or not? You wouldn't even know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what the hell? But that they're just trying to make a point.
Well,
they don't
want to
make it easy. You
no,
know?
No, no, no.
God forbid they'll make it easy for us.
No, never.
Yeah.
The last time that I flew, when I went back east last week, I normally I take like a quarter of a Xanax because flying just like freaks me out, and I just want to relax. I get so uncomfortable in those seats; they really pack us in like sardines. And
right,
I'm pretty tall for I'm like 5'8". I'm not a small person.
Right.
But I was like, nope, I'm not. I'm really like gonna, you know, not use pharmaceuticals, so I'm gonna try edibles and just some CBD lotion on my feet, and it worked just as good.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. There you go. You see, you can. I mean, Rachel is an encyclopedia of weed stuff.
It's so funny. I get hit up all the time now, like as if I'm some sort of doctor or pharmacist. And I'm like, you know, I should be charging people like hundreds of dollars for my consulting, my cannabis consulting and stuff. But
well,
like, again,
like
I'm not
that,
a doctor. So I just know what works for me and what I see with my own eyes and what, you know, I've only experienced. And I always say, like, you know, what works for me may not work for you, and try to just approach everything from a medical standpoint, you know, like, because that's at the end of the day.
But you can still call yourself doctor, you know. There's a doctor, there's a Dr. Dina who walks around. She's the original.
She's a doctor,
Nancy
though, isn't
Botwin.
She?
Yeah. No, she's not.
She's not a doctor.
No, they just Snoop Dogg.
Actually,
Snoop Dogg gave her
that name.
I messaged her.
Oh, because she used to give him his medicine.
Right.
I recently spoke with her, so I'm going to connect with her. I've been meaning to, I'm dying to meet her because I was such a fan of Weeds, and I love that character, Nancy
Botwin.
She's
been on the show
Botwin.
A couple times. That's
really?
That's
why
are
you holding
her.
Out on
but
me?
But that was like a long time ago.
I don't
ago,
know.
Rachel.
We got to get her back.
Yeah, I think she's married now and everything. I follow her on social media.
Matter.
So,
we'll
rather friends, whatever.
We'll bring her back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, no, for sure, for sure. She claims to be the real Nancy Botwin from Weed.
That's,
you know?
Well, I read about her story, which I do think, I mean, that happens a lot.
But that's what she does, though, you know?
That's what happens a lot in Hollywood is...
people steal your idea.
Well, I mean, that is her story.
Yeah,
that's what she... That was her story.
Right,
now
right.
It's somehow a TV show, you know?
Oh, well, at least she can take that credit, I guess, if she wants to. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't prove otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, we're going to continue with the conversation. We haven't teased having a guest, but we do have one, an amazing one, because the way I know is because we got a chance to bond for a few minutes when nobody was here yet. So we had a conversation, and I showed him around. So we're joined by Alex Bedria. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
Of course. You seem like you have a good... air about you, you know, good energy and stuff. And I'm not gay. I'm not making a pass at you or anything.
I literally never thought you were gay for a second. Until now you mentioned it.
Right, yeah. But no, I started realizing, what am I saying? You know, it might sound like beyond just like he's a guest, you know, but no.
Immediately when I walked in, I was like, he is on TV person.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. That's a compliment.
On TV person.
Yeah, you. Yeah, he. That's the I've nicest seen. Thing anybody you're on. Some, exactly. Thank you very much. He's. You can tell. I mean, you just the aura.
Yeah. Mm. Well, welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you.
We
guys.
Appreciate you coming in.
I'm happy to be here.
I did find out a little bit about you. You live in LA, here in the LA area.
I do.
How long have you lived here?
Around a decade now. Actually.
Really?
Yeah.
So you, where did you come from originally?
I'm originally from New York. I was born in New York.
And that's another thing. When I walked in, I said, he is a New York person.
Really?
I can tell. Yeah, you can just tell.
New York on TV person.
A non-TV New York person.
Yeah, we'll see by the end of the show how many hyphens you get, you know?
But I moved here from Florida.
I also knew that you came from Florida because I also spent time
I knew
in
that
Florida.
You knew that. I had a sense of that. Yeah.
See,
what part of Florida?
Central Florida. It's called Ormond Beach, but it's just north of Daytona Beach. So I just tell people Daytona Beach.
Yeah. I lived in Boca for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
I mean, lived. I died in Boca for 4 years.
Why?
Right. Yeah.
What happened there?
No, I mean, it just, Florida's last stop on the map. And when you're constantly surrounded by people who are at the end of your life, you tend to oftentimes, you know, think that you're at the end of your life. I think. So I just, you know, I mean.
So you
just,
say it's, old people in
oh,
Florida.
Oh, man. It's not really. It's where people go to die. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
I can't say my experience was your experience.
Yeah, well, Daytona's different. You're all like NASCAR and.
Daytona's an interesting place. Because there's NASCAR, but there's also spring break.
Yeah, college. Right.
And then each spring break lasts for like a month and a half, 2 months, because every college has their own week that they go off. So there's like Canadian spring break, and there's all the different colleges have their own spring break. Then there's something called BCR, which is Black College Reunion, which is over a weekend, which is all the black colleges in America have their spring break.
I see. Okay.
So it's interesting.
And
it's,
I wonder how it became like that. How did it become
like
that?
Oh, my God. You know,
it's
hilarious. That makes so much sense to me now why there's so many rehab centers in Florida. So what they do is they ship him out for spring break, and then it's kind of like a ploy to like mark, okay, now you can recover here in South Florida. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I had no idea when I went to Florida that it was such a big recovery state, because up until then, what I thought of Florida was spring break, you know,
exactly.
Party, whatever.
And then I was
I was like, and so you also send them here to recover? And then I always found it weird when people would ask me like, so what brings you to Florida? I'm like, school? Like, you know, they're like, uh-huh, what facility is that called? You know, like,
well, there's a lot of New Yorkers in Florida.
It's
too.
True.
There's
New Jersey, New York. New,
yeah, they just moved south, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Well, it's because they come from cold.
Yeah.
I know that I have some family that moved from New York to Florida too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's amazing that people do that, because they can stay on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. It's not too far. And yet, you know, they get sort of like weather like us.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But let's go back to the question I asked you. When or how did Daytona become like such an attraction for spring break?
I really don't know. I mean, I moved there when I was just getting into high school, like middle school.
Right.
So it was already well a part of the culture there. However, when I moved there, spring break, MTV used to do their spring break.
Yeah, that's
there.
What I was going to say. MTV, and you kind of brought it there.
They brought. I mean, you're probably right. I think. I mean, it was always a thing, but it exploded after MTV went there. But when I got there, it got so crazy. I was a kid. I mean, I wasn't involved with any of that.
Right.
But when it got so crazy that MTV was kicked out, the city kicked them out.
Really?
Yeah. So then they went to like, I think,
Vegas,
Panama City. And
then they did, I think, Vegas too. And then Cancun.
Cancun. So it got nuts. And then, but then after they left, it was still spring break. I mean, it was still crazy, but it wasn't like when MTV was there.
Right. Now, so obviously you moved, you were young, you moved because your family moved, right?
Yeah, when I was young.
What was the reason? Did your dad find something new to do? Or?
Yeah, he was kind of semi-retired at the time, and they were looking for a change, and I think that's pretty much what it was.
Yeah, so you moved to Florida, like we just said. Yeah, New Yorkers moved to Florida.
Definitely.
Yeah.
They love the weather, and they love just the, I mean, New York and Florida, and just the lifestyles are totally different.
Yeah, it's like island life in Florida. Like, no worries, you know? Like, like procrastination, you know, is what you do. You just get to it later, you know?
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're on the beach. Because Florida's pretty diverse. I mean, there's the coastal areas, and then Miami is very different than Daytona, mm-hmm. than Jacksonville, but then there's also the center of the state, which is totally different. Mm-hmm. Right. It's one big forest.
So many demographics. Yeah, and in landscapes, like swamp lands, forests.
And ethnic diversity, because it's the South. Right. And so there's some of the Southern stereotypes, like talked about NASCAR and things like that. But it's also a swing state. So you have a lot of, there's a big Cuban population
and
there.
Haitian,
the Puerto Ricans,
Jamaican.
Haitian,
yeah,
exactly.
That's true, yeah. A very
Brazilian.
Important state in elections and stuff, in the scheme of things.
My first election was in 2000 when my county was one of the contested counties that they
were
with Volusia County. Yeah, with the Gore and Bush.
I lived in Boca for the Obama, when Obama ran against, what's that guy's name, the Mormon guy, Binders Full of Women? Whenever they had the third debate, they had it at my college, Lynn University in Boca.
Mitt Romney.
He had binders full of women. Full of women. You don't remember that?
Okay. Right, right.
I just, that's all. I couldn't remember his name. but I think Palm, or whatever that county was, but it was blue and the rest was all like red. Yeah. Red around.
That's Florida.
Yeah. Very interesting. So then you went on, did you go to college after that, after high school?
Yeah, I went to just a local, it was our local community college, Daytona Beach Community College. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do after high school.
Besides, don't you think people should wait a little bit to go to college and not right after high school?
I literally had this conversation with someone the other day. So I don't regret anything in my life per se, but looking back, if I could go back and be like, I would have graduated from high school and then gone to work.
Yes.
Whatever that means. Taking a job in a restaurant, taking a job, you know, in whatever
build
it may be.
Build a base for your life.
Just so I know what I like. Just so I know what I don't like and what I, and give me some more time to like, ooh, I want to study this. I want to find out more about that. Because I feel like when, like, kids who are 17, 18, like, you want them to decide what they want to do for the rest of their lives. Like, that's so much pressure.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially that age.
Yeah. I feel like most of the people that I know aren't necessarily doing things that they got for their degree.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
But going back now, because I'm a communications major, marketing, I have a master's in marketing, but if I could go back, I would have studied English because I, with comedy, writing would have been, and writing and theater.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
What's that noise for crying out loud?
Someone's doing landscaping.
You think?
Mm-hmm.
They're probably like cutting trees or something.
Yeah.
Huh? Well, let's hope they're quiet. But, you see, that's the thing. You got to have, like, a quiet place when you have a radio station.
Mm-hmm. And I think it adds texture to the interview. I like it. It's
very
soothing.
Not for me. It's very distracting.
No, but I agree with you. I think if kids had a little bit more time, or at least to kind of gain a work ethic, because I think if you build work ethic, which isn't necessarily built through going to school, kids have been doing that since,
and
you know,
plus,
whatever.
Remember that you've just finished 12 years of school.
Right, exactly.
Since you were a kid. It's you know, you're fatigued. You want to take a break. You want to open up your eyes to the world. Mm-hmm. You're 18 years old. It's the time you become an adult.
But I think that's why in Israel, it's good that kids go immediately almost into the army.
To the army,
right?
Yeah. And then after the army, they take a trip somewhere, usually Far East or South America or something. Then they come back and they start their schooling.
Brilliant.
You know, but by then, they're grown men and women. You know, but anyway, folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Alex Bedria, joining us this morning in the studio. Alex, you're an actor, you're a director, and we're going to get to your movie, of course, and everything. After all, that's why you're here. But we always like to find out a little bit about our guests and stuff like that, you know, so that's cool. And you probably know that because you said, you know, Rachel, he's been listening to the show, believe it or not. You see,
I have.
Now, there's a guest who prepares, you know, takes his life, his career seriously.
What show did you listen to?
There's a couple that I listened to. The one that I really liked was, you had a guy recently who had a one-man show, and he sort of talked about his life and his challenges.
Yes, remember? But you weren't here, were you?
You weren't here for that one. No, you weren't here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I thought that was really interesting. I was curious to see his show.
I don't know
if I'll have to ask you about that. But awesome. I like the way that you like you just said, like you get to know your guests,
right?
Which ultimately I think enriches the work that they're trying to put out.
Right, right. And that was this. That guy was pretty revealing.
Yeah, you know? I was saying, it was really memorable. He really put it out there. I mean, there was no filter.
Right, right. It was amazing.
Interesting.
I'll tell you which one it is. Yeah. You should listen to it. You see, that's the problem. I haven't been keeping up with the show summaries. So you go back in the archives, you don't know what happened on each show. And I'm so irritated at myself. So I got to start doing this again. So, because it keeps a nice track of where everybody was. Like, if you want to look for your show, you scroll, bam, there's going to be your name. But right now, I've been slacking off. So let's decide that since I admitted and confessed to this today, from today, your name is going to be on there. And moving forward, I'll do it every day.
Okay, good.
Okay?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Because we got to keep track. So you ended up in California, but what did you decide to do then? I mean, did you decide you're going to take a direction in your life? When did that happen?
It kind of found me. I mean, I was in my second semester of college, and I just was sort of toiling. You know, I wasn't really interested in anything, and then I fell into an acting class, a theater class. And from that first scene that I did, I mean, it's like the old cliche, you're bitten by the bug, but that was it.
Really?
That was completely it. And I never looked back after that. And in my entire life, I never put the kind of energy and focus and passion and commitment into the craft. And I mean, that was it. It was so much, academically, I was never great. And I played sports, but I was never the top guy. And I just sort of toiled for a long time until I found that theater class. And it's like, oh, wow, this fits really well. This fits from that first scene. It was just something clicked in my head.
How cool. Yeah, so that's what you were supposed to do, man. It just took time to find it.
It just took time.
Some people take some 50 years to find out what they're supposed to do.
It was very clear from that first. And then from then on out, I actually was enrolled in all my prerequisite classes. I just stopped going. I mean, I stopped going probably within a week or two and just took the theater class and took every theater class that I could after that.
And that took a lot of courage, right? I mean,
or ignorance, however you want to look at it. But you know, and my parents were sort of like, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah, right?
but they saw, like, wow, we've never seen him this committed to anything. And now it's like all of the energy cycled into studying theater and acting and drama and all those kinds of things.
That's cool. So you started actually doing theater and stuff in school?
Yeah, I did my first play not long after that class. It was really cool because, you know, I was a pretty introverted kid. I was a pretty shy kid. And when I did that first play, it was such an extroverted character who, you know, I aged probably 30, 40 years throughout the play, and it was very big and very Southern. Right. And at the end of the show, I went to backstage, and my parents were waiting for me with, you know, flowers, as you do. And my dad was emotional. He had tears in his eyes. He says, I've never seen you like that. I've never seen you so putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And without realizing it, he gave me the greatest compliment an actor can get.
Right.
By
right.
saying it was like you were this completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he wasn't patronizing. He was saying it like from such an honest place because they just thought.
And he knows you.
Exactly.
I mean,
right.
You know, if he sees you being different or more energized, more focused, more.
Yeah. Or just see you as a completely, as someone else.
Right.
You know?
See, you need your parents to see you that way.
Are you kidding? I got that compliment when I called them the other day and they were like, you know, we watched your set from the Burbank Comedy Festival, and I gotta say, you made us, you know, you genuinely made us laugh, you know?
Oh, there's a compliment.
But then they told me a reporter called them and to ask them about them being racist because of a joke that I put up.
Oh my God.
I didn't have to deal with that.
Yeah, and besides, what do you have to do with them? Why do they have to go to the parents? I mean, you're your own person.
That seems a little...
Because they look for scoops and shit.
You're right. Yeah, I think that's a little... That's not.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a long way to come to find out that joke was really not that funny. But thank you.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna save that one for never. Just never gonna bring it. Never gonna use it again.
Well, the struggles with parents, you know. But luckily, your parents got behind you, which is very important.
They did, but you know, my dad then realized that. Oh wow, he's really doing this, and he. You know, wasn't in the entertainment business, but sort of had a peripheral knowledge of how difficult it was, because I think he had known some people involved in producing and stuff in the past, and he was just like, look, you know, you can be the most talented person, you can be the hardest working person, and still that's not any guarantee of success.
Right.
You're going to have to find people who believe in you, people who are sort of sponsors to give you a chance.
Yeah,
that's the way
right.
it's set up. That's really the way it's set up. And so when I'm young, I...
excuse me.
When I was young, I mean, that's in one ear and out the other because I was so sort of driven and passionate, and that became the total focus. But as I've gotten older, I've realized, yeah, he was totally right. I mean, he was totally right.
It's that's usually the case, man. It's like the kid has to go through it themselves because the hell with what your parents say, you know? Like you don't believe it until you actually
It. I mean, I think that's kind of what it is because, like, it's the same it's in comedy. There's so many, everyone wants to be comedian. Everyone wants, you know, and there's so many talented, funny people, but it's about aligning yourself with people who do, who will give you a chance, you know, who genuinely believe in you. And like, I got lucky too, because I, like a comedian kind of just like took me under his wing and just, you know, was mentoring me, bringing me around, introducing me to like bookers and everything. And like now I'm getting booked and I'm a baby comic. Like I've only been doing it for a year, you know, and
you need somebody to vouch for you.
For sure.
You need somebody to vouch for you.
People like that.
And I think that with parents, from my dad, it was coming from a place of just, you don't want your kids to struggle is my sense. And so he thought, well, okay, you're choosing a life that's rife with struggle for most people, for the vast majority of people in anything, in entertainment, comedy, acting, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, most people, if you get down to it, even people who seem to be overnight successes. And I have friends who are up and down the gamut of success. It's never what it looks like from the outside. No. It never is.
Wow.
So, I love, I get, I have not done anything, but I always love getting the, like, you're killing it, you know, because we put out on social media and they see, you know, they see only the successes and the little things and the good times. And like, I think there should be like a miserable gram, you know, where we just post like just the shittiest parts of our days, just so we know, you know, like it's not all rainbows. And
well, some people do that.
Yeah,
though,
right. That's true. So. That's true. So funny.
Oh, well, you
you're
know,
killing it. Like, I have $0 in my bank account right now.
Well, but, you know, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, look, you got to have both. You got to follow your passion. You also have to pay your bills. And that's just the way it is. You know, that's the way it goes. But at any rate, going back to this, so you actually, at what point did you decide then? So is that when you decided to move to LA when you finished your schooling?
I didn't even finish the schooling. I took every theater class I could, and I actually and I went back and audited classes that I had already taken just so I could take classes again. I asked the professor who had become a friend. I said, "Do you mind if I just sit and do scenes with the other students? Because I don't want to take any of these other classes." So at the time, I managed to get an agent in Florida. And a manager, and I started working a little bit. You know, I started doing some jobs as an actor, nothing huge, but like, you know, commercials and industrials and some theater and what have you, and also, you know, making short films and things like that with friends.
Yeah.
So I knew I was heading in the direction of LA, but I was hoping I would get a job that would inevitably take me out here. And I was up for a few TV jobs in Florida because there was some stuff that shot in like North Carolina and stuff that used to be the WB. I think it's the CW.
All
now.
That vampire stuff got shot out there.
I think one of my first TV auditions was for one of the last seasons of Dawson's Creek, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They would come and audition actors in Florida and shows like One Tree Hill. And But my dad actually got sick. He got cancer. And so over the course of a year, while he was going through chemo, I was, you know, doing the acting thing, but also taking care of him.
Yeah.
I, you know, when he got sick and he passed, at that moment, it was kind of like, okay, if I'm going to go out and do this, I have to really do this. And he, toward the end, he was just like, you know, you know where you have to go, you know what you have to do.
Right, exactly.
So that was, I mean, it's almost cliche sounding, but it's like a rite of passage. It's like, you know, this is the time for you to do what you need to do. And I mean, not to say that I wouldn't have come out had that not happened, but I think that was like a kick in the ass. You know, that was like, all right, let's go ahead and live your life and do what you need to do. It wasn't easy leaving my mom and my family, but they totally understood.
Yeah, that, yeah. You know, and you got to move on. You know, I mean, you got to build your life wherever you need. You're going to grow.
Yeah.
You know, wherever you feel you're going to grow. So you started acting here and you moved here. How long ago did you say?
Oh, I think I moved here like
10 years
ago.
Yeah,
around 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Well, we don't need the exact date. That's fine. 10 years ago. So
I'm sorry. I can check my calendar if you'd like. I have it in there somewhere.
Right.
Oh, well, sometimes I just set up those things, you know, where it sounds stupid.
Not at all.
Yeah. At any rate, so Wow, so you moved here, you started acting. Did you get yourself a manager and an agent right away?
I tried. I had some connections, I guess you could say. I thought I did, coming from Florida. You know, people who knew people out here. Right. And I was so prepared when I came out. I mean, I had a list of people I was reaching out to. And wow. But, you know, one by one, it didn't quite work out.
Right, because, you realize they're all promises, right?
Exactly, exactly. So you come out, and I had done a few things in Florida. I thought, you know, and I was in the union. I was SAG. And so I thought, in Florida, that's a big deal. I was a big fish in a small pond. Ah. But when I came out to L.A., I thought, hopefully that would count for something. Right. But, of course, when you come out here, the treadmill's already going.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I would meet with agents.
It's like take a number and get in line.
Yeah, I would meet with agents when I was probably, I don't know, 22, 23. Yeah. And they would say, you know, We think you're talented. We like your look, but you're competing against guys who've already been working since they were 12 and have, you know, 20 credits on series and movies. Yeah. And so essentially, they're in a way, it's like they're telling you you're a little over the hill at 21, 22, which is interesting. And so I laugh about it. I never let that stuff get to me because I think it's kind of it is kind of ridiculous. But but you know, it took a while to really kind of get the ball rolling on getting work and getting auditions and opportunities. It took it took a good while. I wasn't. Yeah. Most people, I think it's that way. I have one or two friends that came out here and they, you know, within a week or two, they had an agent or a manager and they were starting to work. And I think those stories kind of mess with actors' heads because they know that it does happen to certain people, but it's such a lottery that it's so rare that it doesn't happen to everybody.
Right.
So so for me, it took a while. I really had to build my relationships and start from the ground up.
Yeah. Sure. And you see, Rachel, that's the thing, man. You
I haven't
pay
even
your
tried.
Dues.
I honestly haven't even tried to get a manager, an agent. I feel like... I mean, Tori, when she was like, do you have one? You have to meet me. You know, I get that all the time. I don't have a reel together. My reel is not that impressive. I feel like...
No, but what I'm saying is, I didn't mean that. What I'm saying is, you got to put in your dues. You got to pay your dues, put in your time, and, you know, and really build a lot of material and a lot of content. And then you go...
Of course.
Because, right, I mean, people want to see... something that's finished, they don't want you to talk about, this is what I can do, right?
100%.
Right?
In this day and age especially.
Right.
And you're a comic primarily, mm-hmm. right? I think that you're in a really good position because you're funny or you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, you with acting and needing people to hire you, it's a little different.
Right.
But I really believe in generating your own content. And mm-hmm. all of what you do is generating your own content. So if you have stuff of value...
That's what I... See, that's... I'm kind of like... I'm coming from a different era almost because a lot of my content is all digital. It's not necessarily, I've been in this movie. I've been in this whatever. It's like, okay, I create content on my own that gets millions of impressions. You know what I mean? Like I have a following on Instagram because I've captured a niche... a group of like whatever that article said about me, that counterculture, if you will. So I have that going for me. But you're right. I mean, for me, it was important at 29. I was like, I have to get into stand-up comedy now. I couldn't have done it any earlier in my life. I just didn't have the life experience, or was I in a place mentally to even like be like, I'm going to put this out there.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people... There's so much of that, oh God, it's so hard to be an actor, it's so this, it's so that, but it's like, yeah, but if that's what your passion is, you would rather struggle doing what you love and fighting for what you want to do rather than some shit job that might pay you a decent amount of money. Like, you have to start. You just have to start creating and putting yourself out there if that's what, you know, you
want to
do.
It's your life, you know? I mean, it's like, if you're living it for you, you do what is yours to do. I mean, I think it's...
And it does come with struggle. And that's the thing is, like, you have to... That's what makes you better. That's what makes you a better actor. It's what makes you a better comic, you know?
Right.
Like,
well, you're battle-hardened.
Yeah.
And that can get a little rough, too, because sometimes people can get a little too hard and a little too cynical. So, like you said, Sam, it's like a balance. It's like it's like finding a little more of a sense of balance between the things that are positive and the things that are not so positive.
Right.
And the things that you do in your life, whatever it is, to keep that balance.
Yeah. And I think it's very important, you know. But that totally, like, makes sense. And that's why, you know, and you get inspired every time we get people like this here, because it's usually the same story of, like, this is what, you know, it's like, There's so much competition that you realize, let me generate my own stuff,
yeah,
right?
I'm a huge believer in that.
Right, so that's what you did.
Right. There is so much competition, but there's no one else that's you.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And
so this is what you did. This is what you did. You decided to make your own film?
Yeah. It's sort of been leading to that because I'd made a few shorts. I'd written and produced and acted in, but I didn't direct a few shorts that had gotten some good attention. I mean, I had gotten a job on a show called The Newsroom on HBO in part because I had written a short film that was about kind of like similar kind of political Aaron Sorkin-esque type dialogue because I love it. So I made a short film, not for the intent of getting on that show, but just because I wanted to do it and I wanted to make something. So this was a couple of years ago and I'd made that and somehow it got in front of the casting director for that show and it got me in the room.
Wow.
And because they saw, oh, this guy can, you know, he can handle this kind of dialogue. He can do this kind of, you know, fast-paced, very political-style dialogue. And then it ended up landing me a really important job on The Newsroom, which sort of moved me forward, moved the needle forward a little bit.
Right.
So I mean, but I didn't come from, again, from a place of making this so that it would get me somewhere.
Right.
I made it because I had to.
Exactly. If you're a true artist, you don't create for any other reason than to create, you know, that's what the point is. It's not to get something.
You need to.
Because it's with the confidence that the right people will it will really connect with the right people.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And folks, we got to move forward because I think we essentially got to the present at this moment in your story. And we can get into the film itself because I've been teasing it and I haven't even given you the name of the film yet. But and by the way, we are joined by Alex Bedria. Your movie is called The Zim. Now, let me ask you this. Does this refer to Zimbabwe?
Yes, it refers to Zimbabwe.
And the reason I know that because I lived in South Africa for a year, and they refer to Zim all the time in the headlines because they don't want to spell out the whole name, Zimbabwe.
Right, right.
Right? And the newspaper headlines. So, The Zim. So obviously this tells us about the story before we even start, because we know where we're focused on in this story, right? This is in Africa?
Right, this is in southern Africa.
Right.
It takes place in the early 2000s in southern Africa. And if you lived in South Africa, you're probably familiar with the background of the story.
Really? Because I lived there in 98. And you say in 2000, it's about the same time.
About the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So it's about the farm invasions that took place in Zimbabwe in and around that time, and where they really escalated, where they got really violent. Essentially, it was the the government there was for 100 years, around a century, it was a colony of Great Britain. Zimbabwe was.
Okay.
So there was a white minority that had all the money, had all the power, that controlled.
And they ruled.
And they essentially ruled.
Right.
And then the revolution happened.
Right.
And
those were remnants from colonial times, right?
Yes, from colonial times. Yeah.
Right.
So there, and some pretty horrendous stuff went down in colonial times.
Really?
Nobody talks about, but the farm invasions that ended up happening and the sort of political upheaval is a kind of a natural symptom of the suffering that the colonialization incurred, you know, that
right.
So the farm invasion started to happen because the government said, well, we want to start taking because there was a white minority population that controlled or that owned a lot of the land,
right.
The very fruitful farmland. So essentially, the government said that, well, we're going to start reclaiming this land for the black majority population, specifically the poor population, just coming in and reclaiming the land. And so, of course, this caused a lot of controversy.
Right.
And what ended up happening was that there were essentially mobs that came onto the farmland and would take it by force.
Wow. White mobs?
Black mobs.
Black mobs.
That would try to come into the white-owned farmland.
Okay.
And take it by force.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. And so it resulted in some pretty horrendous and violent events.
Yeah, a lot of violence.
And it was and still is a very complicated issue because the for a long time there was and is a wealth disparity, difference in wealth between the black and white populations.
And that's like an explosion waiting to happen.
Exactly
right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what happened in South Africa, pretty much, right?
I believe it is happening in South Africa.
But didn't it already? I mean, like, and that's why apartheid is no more. Would you say that?
Well,
I mean, it's officially not, but right? I mean, there's still a lot of like discrimination in South Africa.
Sure,
well,
there's discrimination everywhere, I'd say.
Yeah.
But I'd say that that for me, the subject matter had never been dramatized. It had never been made into a film, and I thought there was really some really interesting themes to explore dramatically, trying to turn this into a narrative story and trying to create balance between both sides of this story as much as I could.
Right.
And so that was really part of the, you know, it was like a seed that implanted in my mind when I'd heard about this. I thought, yeah, this would really make a fascinating film if I can find an angle on how to create equal perspective between the point of views of the characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because again, wow. it's one of those things that still to this day, when we announced it, when we were doing a Kickstarter and Indiegogo and all those things to raise money for the film, by and large, the majority of people were very supportive about us making a film about it because I voiced in the materials that I wanted to make a film that was more about reconciliation than it was about violence. But some people were still very, very kind of curious about, well, I mean, what perspective are you going to take? Whose side are you going to take? Because there are people on both sides that are very angry about what happened. So it just reminded me of the responsibility of telling the story right and trying to tell the story with balance.
So people are still passionate about this to this day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, very interesting. Now, how did you become interested in this? I mean, here you are, a kid in L.A., you know, whatever, and suddenly you decide how did this happen?
It's funny when I would tell people initially that, hey, I want to make a movie about the farm invasions in Zimbabwe, Africa, they'd kind of look at me sideways like, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Where did that come from, right?
I think I was looking a couple of years ago I wanted to tell a story. I wanted to do a short film, but a short film that felt very grand, that felt very epic, that had really big themes in it, that felt like it was trying to say something.
And very emotional, maybe emotionally charged.
I guess an epic would be the word too. So many short films that I've seen are very contained. You know, they're very, because of the nature of telling a story in a short form, and also you know, the budgetary limitations. To be honest, I mean, you make these films and they're very small. I wanted to make something that felt very big and intimate at the same time, like a lot of the movies I grew up loving, and so I thought. At the same time, I had a friend who was living in Zimbabwe who was telling me these stories about the people that he was meeting and the political unrest and the history. And the more I dug into the history, I thought, oh, there's something here. There's something here that I don't know quite what it is, but there's a story to be told here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watched a few documentaries, one in particular called Mugabe and the White African, which was shortlisted for an Academy Award. It's a fascinating documentary about a white-owned farm that was invaded by a mob sympathetic to the government. And so you see the plight of these people. And what I saw was it wasn't just the white family that was getting attacked. It was the black farm workers that were trying to protect them, the people that had communities on the farms.
Right.
So that, to me, was the hook. That was when I found my way into the story, which was, oh, I see now. It's not a white-black thing, really. It's more about wealth. It's more about power. And it's about sort of retribution for the sins of the father. So like, if your father father, then I decide I'm going to wrong you. Where does it end? You
know, right, when exactly. It's back and forth.
Exactly.
Revenge and back.
Exactly. And so to me, that was the hook into the story, is that average everyday people are put up against a wall, and the stakes are so high, life and death, and they have to, you know, decide, am I going to stay in this farm that my father had, that my grandfather had, or am I going to leave and flee?
Right.
And so those themes were interesting to me, and also the themes of like national identity and racial identity and those kinds of things.
Right.
So.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is a story that someone has to tell, and you know, you probably never expected you would come up with a story like this. It's so like seems distant from us. You know what I'm saying? It's so like distant in time and place. Who would think about this? And there you go and you bring it to light.
I feel like it may seem like distant, but I feel like the themes are also very relatable.
Yeah,
in,
yeah.
In, at a right. you know, in a personal level in some way too, if that
You're
makes
totally
sense.
Right.
You know?
The one piece of, thankfully people have been really moved by the film and responding to it beautifully, but the consistent thing that I keep hearing is, wow, this is really timely.
Mm-hmm.
People in this country, 100%. In the United States.
Yeah.
And so they see, and so sometimes through film, we can look at stories that seem really far away, and science fiction is really good at this. Right. You look at stories that seem so far away, literally, and yet you see a reflection of yourself.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so that those kinds of stories, I think, are fascinating, because sometimes when we're looking at something that's literally about us, we're a little too close to it, and we can't be truly, we can't truly take it in and be open, but when we're seeing something that's about somewhere else, sometimes it sneaks in a little bit, sneaks into our heart and
that's
our minds.
True.
So
that's true. Well, the movie is The Zim. How can people see this? I mean, are you going through the festival now?
We actually just premiered at the Los Angeles International Short Film Festival, which is an amazing film festival that takes place in LA.
Uh-huh.
And we won. We took home.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Whoa, there you
go. Awesome.
You know?
We took home Best of Fest, 300, almost 300 films in this festival.
Wow.
Really?
And it was our first. Yeah, we just premiered it. I mean, there were some really amazing films that were there, and there were some very well-known
300 films.
Some very well-known celebrities, actors, and directors that had films there. And my first, you know, my directorial debut goes in. I was just really happy to premiere it.
Right.
We had a wonderful showing. We had like the evening of the premiere was sold out, and people just seemed to really like it. And I was happy. Like, that was a victory for me.
Yeah,
and a few nights later was the awards ceremony, and I was like, I'm not going to go. We're not going to get
anything.
My wife was like, no, we're going. You're going to go.
Wow.
Well, all right,
can
fine.
You imagine if you hadn't gone and you would have won?
I know. But I truly, honest to God, I know it's what everybody says, but honest to God, it was the last thing I was expecting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when we go,
wow,
we're sitting there and we're watching
cool.
these wonderful films, and we won Best of Fest. So now, you know, it's sort of interesting. It's we'll see where we're going to be next.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't
this
it great? These little moments open you up to the future.
It opens
the rest,
up
like,
so much.
Like the short or whatever you made to get you the job on The Newsroom. You know what I mean? Like, who
right.
knew that would. You're just creating to create, but what you create is amazing. It's, you know, so.
That's really, I mean, it's so fresh that I honestly, like you said, it's presumably, hopefully we'll open things up and get the film out there more because it just sort of happened.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have a handle on it yet.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of like, wow, I'm still saying I'm really happy it premiered and I'm happy people liked it. And that's essentially the thing that I feel the most proud of is when people are moved by it and that. But this whole LA Shorts thing is sort of beyond me. I'm not really sure.
Yeah,
I haven't processed
it
yet.
That's the thing. You're going through a transformation yet. I mean, there is a lot to process because this is life-changing. You know what I'm saying? Your life is changing now because, like Rachel said, it opens up so much for you that, you know, suddenly all these doors are opening. You go, oh, well, you know, we won the LA Shorts International Festival.
And how cool is it that it's your work and not you working on some, you know what I mean?
I will say that, I mean, firstly,
It's your baby. It's not like you just acted in it or were a part of it. This is yours, right?
It's absolutely mine, I wrote it and produced it and directed it. I mean, it sounds so... I kind of... My voice trails off as I say, like, I acted and produced it, directed it. Because it's you know, when people say that to me, I'm like, okay, well, let's take a look at this. Because sometimes when you spread yourself so thin, the project suffers. But I worked on this for 5 years. And I really, you know... So many ups and downs. We would need days to go over all of it. But raising money is not easy.
No.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And
this is like heaven, like opening up a business, and then you have to finance it,
risks.
And you have to plan it, and
it's
stuff.
So it's so like I forget what that word is, but you know, you're putting yourself out there. It's your art, and it's subject to critique and criticism.
It's vulnerable,
and it's expensive. You know, and that's the other thing is like it's an expensive thing for people to potentially not like.
Exactly. That's true.
I just am glad when people enjoy it and they respond to it. And, like you say, the LA Shorts thing is life changing. It's like. maybe it's my years of being an actor and sort of dealing with the ups and downs of that, where I'm pretty pragmatic about things. And so I'm not having any expectations about right. where it goes from here at all. If this is where it peaks, then I think that this is a tremendous, if we peaked at that premiere right. and that would be a tremendous victory. And so everything from here on out, I'm just really appreciative. And, yeah, and cool. I just want to get it into the right festivals and hope get it in front of more people so that they can just enjoy it. Because when you make something, as you know, with your comedy,
right.
When you write something, you just want people to hear it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And, that's
it needs
really
to be out there.
I would
right?
hope that they yeah. would laugh.
Yeah. You know? right. Well, that's what you work on, yeah. you know. So did you mention a wife? Is that what you mentioned? So you married.
Recently.
You have support.
Congratulations.
Really?
Thank you.
Congratulations
thank you.
To you.
I find myself gesturing with my ring hand a lot. Makes me very
oh,
official.
Yeah. So we
yes.
can see the
He's
the
a husband
ring.
Now.
Yeah. Yes, I'm
there
a husband.
You go. He's off the market. But the question is... So you said recently, right?
Yeah.
When did you have time to find a wife during all this work?
We've been together for a good while.
Oh, really?
About 10 years or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
we said this yesterday.
That's what we
10
were talking.
Years, and then, you know.
And then you get married.
Yeah. I think yeah. that's a good time to spend before. Because it's like 10 years is a good investment.
Yeah, that's true,
I'd say
right?
so. I'd say
at that
so.
Point, you're going, you know, I mean, I might as well stay, right?
But my secret is she's also my co-producer on the film, and she's in the movie playing my wife, though we weren't married at the time. So she's a wonderful actress. Mm. And so she's...
You saw what she could be like...
Yes, it was research. It
exactly.
was,
yes.
But
she played the part.
But she was the only one, because I had some amazing help making this thing, but she was the only one that was there from every draft, from the beginning,
right.
you know, through the casting process, through every edit of the movie, through the different versions of the music that we had. I mean, she was there every time, and she really showed me how really sharp she is with regard to producing. I told her, I said, you should do this producing thing. She says, I don't know, you know, maybe just for my projects, but she's really good. Yeah. She's really smart.
That's awesome. Well, you see, you found your other half.
Yes.
Okay. Alex Bedria, the movie's The Zim. And so can people see it? I mean, at least a trailer or something?
Yeah, thezimfilm.com, T-H-E-Z-I-M film, FILM.com. You can find the trailer and also the links to our social media. And there's some cool announcements coming up that I can't quite talk about yet because I'm not supposed to.
Right.
Because they've asked me not to. But if anyone's interested in the film or to see the trailer first, and the trailer was great because the trailer actually we released about a year ago, well before we were done with the movie, and it went viral. It actually went, which I did not expect. It was actually my cinematographer,
nice.
Matt McCarr, he was brilliant. We cut a trailer just for our wrap party, just so that people can see, hey, this is what we worked on. And we decided, it was so well received, we decided to release it
That's
online.
Cool. That's the way to do it.
And it was like...
Create the hype.
Exactly. And it went viral. And so that trailer is the one in the website that I mentioned, thezimfilm.com. People can see it. And then please follow our social media and you can learn a little more about the film and about the people who made it.
Great. Cool. And is there a way to support it, support you in your continuing projects?
I'd say just following our social media.
Like them on Facebook, Twitter,
like
Instagram.
Like them everywhere.
Yeah.
Pinterest.
And, yeah. Everybody's got to have likes and likes and likes. But... I tell you, Alex, fascinating story. You know, I mean, I'm very impressed. I think you've done a tremendous job, you know, coming from, you know, from New York, moving over to the other side, to Florida, and then back, and all this stuff. So I can congratulate you.
Thank you.
On everything that you've done, man. And, I mean, this award is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, and congratulations to you. I mean, if nothing else, you know what this says? It says that even if you don't think that you may be the greatest, like you even said, you weren't sure you wanted to go, but yet there you were, man. You didn't even know how people felt about you until you were actually out there.
Right,
and you were voted, you know.
Yeah.
So
and a lot of that probably had to do with, like, you know, hey, I didn't think we were going to get anything, but I was also probably protecting myself a little too. Like, I don't want to go because if I sit there and they're announcing the names of the winners, it's like, and there might be a little hope, but I didn't think we had a shot. And I didn't mean, I don't mean that as a negative, because there were some amazing films at that festival.
I believe you.
So I
was
like, so it's just, it's a wonderful acknowledgement, and I just take it as encouragement to keep going.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, everybody go out, check out at least the trailer, follow them, and we'll see your future projects. You know, I mean, I was going to ask you, what do you have coming up next for you? But you said some of the stuff you have in the works.
Right. So I'm working on something now off the heels of this that hopefully we'll get rolling on pretty
soon. Great. So you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
You know, we'd love to have you, man. Okay, everybody, we're way over time, but I did this because our next show is just going to be a replay because the host can't make it today. So at any rate, stay tuned. Everybody have a great weekend. Rachel, you
see
do
you
too.
On Tuesday.
Yes. Okay, so you're not going to be here Monday. Oh, we're going to miss you again.
Miss you guys.
There's another Monday without Rachel, but you know what? She's going to be in Vegas entertaining people, so why not?
Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah. All it's right, but I'm going to be here Monday, folks, so have a good one, and we'll see you then.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.